Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
So glad you're bringing the energy today, Jake. Not at all in character for you. Wow, very excited about a Mariners win. Don't worry, we
Heck
will
yeah.
get to it because there is plenty to talk about. The Mariners finally clinch a winning record in the 2021 season after beating the A's for the seventh straight time. Very exciting. We've got Seattle Times' Ryan Divish on with us to talk about the key for this team, not just for the rest of the series, but for the rest of this season. They've got, what, 11 to play?
Yeah, 11 to play.
11 to play.
All right,
11
here you go. Here you go. Huge series, huge win needed today as well. So, again, we'll be getting to that later. First, though, I have a question. I was thinking about it the other day. I feel like we're in the Twilight Zone. Like, just you ever have like an out of body experience where, Curtis, you've had this before. You wake up, you start getting ready for school or ready for work, and then you realize like, oh, your alarm went off at the wrong time, or it's Saturday. But it kind of feels weird the entire time, and you're looking around like, why is no one else? Why is no one else doing the same thing? What's happening?
Yes, right there.
What's going on? Am I in the Twilight Zone right now? And everyone around you is just acting normal, and you don't get it. You don't understand. Well, I'll tell you what I'm in the Twilight Zone about. Okay, you have to I'm scared now. I'm scared. The expectations for this defense are so low, and I'm in the I don't understand, Jake, how we keep having conversations about this game, and I have my own issues with offense. I cannot understand how many people are like, I mean, the defense was fine. You just can't have those penalties. The defense was fine? You know who's not saying that? I'll tell you one person who's not saying it. Here's one person who's not saying it.
We just got to be smarter. We got to look at the film. We got to understand what they did against us in the second half that teams are, you know, going to start mimicking. And, you know, you just have to play better, execute better. And definitely in, like, big moments and big times where we really need to stop, where we really need to be on our jobs. We need to make sure that we're focused and locked in.
Oh, that sound that you just heard, that quote was from your defensive captain, one of your team captains, Bobby Wagner, who sounds so down and so upset because he knows that the expectations for this defense are higher. He knows they have way too much talent to perform the way they did in the second half on Sunday. So why are fans setting the bar so low? Bobby Wagner himself has
I don't know. It's honestly, it's puzzling to me. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I get that. You look at the offense in terms of the way that it finished and the expectation that's there for your franchise quarterback, for your $35 million quarterback, for a guy who is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, who's done it, you know, many times before, of, you know, being in situations where you're down or you're tied and having, you know, the ball in the last possession and going down and driving, getting that field goal, getting the touchdown that you need to win the game, and they didn't deliver there. I understand that. But in terms of getting to the point that they were in, I mean, Stacey, they gave up, what was it? How many points in the second half? They gave up 17 points, or
22?
Sorry, they gave up 21 points in the second half.
Yeah.
21 points.
Yeah. Huh?
So at 24 overall, if you're including overtime, that's a debacle. That's a debacle in the second half. You talk about the yardage. You talk about everything that was given up in the second half. That, to Bobby Wagner, to his point, that's not acceptable. It's not acceptable for this defense. And to have that be excused away or to have it be glossed over, I don't get it. Because as we've said all along, the ability of this team, the ceiling of this team, if this defense is a top 15 level defense, then you have a chance to get to a Super Bowl. And the way the offense played in the first half, the way the defense played in the first half, that's why you walked into halftime feeling great. That's why if you're Pete Carroll and you're seeing the score and it's 24-9, you're going into halftime smiling and jacked up and excited, and everybody's feeling good going into the second half of this game because you played championship-level football in the first half. In the second half, you don't. You just simply don't. You get beat. You get worn down. Your gap integrity changes. The amount of yardage that you're giving up in the passing game, it all changes. And that, to me, is something that when you look at moving forward, is absolutely a concern.
I just don't know why the conversation becomes, if we are all leaving this game saying offense and defense needed to be better, and that there are some people saying, no, defense They're fine. They're fine. Defense, just do that week in and week out. Just don't make that many penalties. I would get it if this defense was full of guys that you drafted in the late rounds, random free agents, but guys that weren't making an impact, not like great free agent, kind of like treasures that you found. But it's not. I mean, someone texting in right now, Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. I mean, I'm going to disagree with you, but thank you for joining the conversation. I know we're both passionate about this. They said that the defense wasn't great last year. That's why the expectation is so low. Yeah, but last year we were having a conversation wondering why the defense wasn't better when you had Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, you have halfway through the season, Carlos Dunlap, who was an impetus for change for that defense. He was a nice little catalyst to get things going, and I'm glad that he's back on this defense, and he looked fantastic in training camp despite not being hugely impactful with sacks so far this year. But what you've got two Pro Bowlers at safety, including one who's a first-team All-Pro. You know what I mean? Like, if you were looking at this defense from afar, two first-round picks, two second-round picks, you're saying, really, their only weakness should be corner, where they've just got some untested guys. But instead, people are saying, well, you know, the offense is supposed to carry the load here. Really, it's Russell Wilson needed to be better. And you know what? They're not wrong. Russell Wilson needed to win it late for them. He did. In this game, Russell Wilson needed to do more.
Right.
That is a fact.
But let's change the phrasing of it, though.
Well, no, but
he didn't lose the game. They didn't bail him out.
No, I don't think Russell Wilson is the single biggest reason.
They didn't bail them out the way that the expectation is and the level is that they should. And you're going to expect that every single time. But I would say who lost the game, right? And again, this isn't pointing the finger and trying to blame all the way around. I think that there's plenty of that to go around in terms of everyone sharing the loss in this. Offense, defense, special teams, everybody shares in this loss. But to sit there and say that the offense lost you the game, I don't think true at all.
They
just didn't bail the defense out the way that you would expect them to in that moment. And I would anticipate through the given season that they will do it more often than not. That is the trend of the way that this team has played, the way that this quarterback's played through the season. But I'm confused as to why everybody is passing the blame offensively and not looking at a defensive debacle in the second half and saying, yeah, that probably needs to get cleaned up.
There is blame offensively to be placed on them. There is blame offensively. You need to sustain drives. Third down conversions were abysmal in the second half. You need to be better, period.
No doubt.
I'm not taking any blame off of that. But I think what I'm saying is, like, the expectation for this team isn't make the defense okay and get a wild card. It's win a Super Bowl. And I'm seeing so many people say this is a dumb and deflecting argument. The offense needs to sustain drives. The defense is out there too long. Well, here's Bobby Wagner's response to sustaining drives.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. You know, definitely the standard that we have, you know, and expect of ourselves. You know, again, I think a couple of those drives, we hurt ourselves. And so we just got to get out of our own way and find a way to get off the field.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but last time I checked, Bobby is maybe the only one of us all having this conversation who was playing, who says, hey, we hurt ourselves in some of these moments. We need to get off the field. This is a symbiotic relationship. It goes both ways. The offense needed to sustain drives. The defense can't be committing penalties after making a big stop on second down or first down. You know what I mean? Like, you go from the first drive of the game, and they were great in the first half, the first quarter especially. Puna Ford makes a fantastic stop, a tackle for loss of Derrick mm-hmm. Henry. It was great. He had a phenomenal, like, first two snaps of the game. And then they convert. So it's like you had so many moments like that, but later in the game when they started getting back into it that you were noticing more often. The defense needs to get off the field too. And by the way, Pete Carroll's a defensive-minded head coach who's produced some of the finest talent the league has seen in the past decade. Why is the bar, hey, be like 23 overall?
Yeah, well, it's continued to go down every single year, right? The expectations for the defense on that particular side of the ball. And this is what's disturbing to me as I look at this. And it's not one isolated game. From an isolated game perspective, when you look at it offensively, yes, you need to sustain third downs. I've hammered that on Monday and Tuesday of this week, that is a huge issue that they have to solve. They need to sustain drives. They need to keep themselves on the field. They cannot rely on quick strikes to try and get them through a given game. They put up 30 points. That in its entirety over the course of a season. And this is the issue that we ran into last year with the Seahawks, is that the expectation was, oh, well, the defense isn't good. The offense is going to have to win us games, and the offense is going to have to play at a level that's never been seen before. You're going to have to put up 34 points per game if we're going off this Titans game to ensure a victory. That's not sustainable. And guess what? You don't have a total commitment. That's not the philosophy to win here in Seattle.
Kansas City did do that in 2018. They had 34 points per game.
They were in total commitment to it, though. Yeah. This is who we are. This is what we're going to be. Our offseason acquisitions are going to be centered all around that. Stacey, that's not what this team is. This team is not is the philosophy of Pete Carroll, and the way that he would draw it up is to not have the offense need to score over 30 points per game in order for them to win. So by their own standard, their own philosophy, this isn't good enough on both sides of the coin for them to win. So when you talk about this defensively, guess what? You're gonna go up against another really good offense in the Minnesota Vikings, who despite being 0-2, they've been competitive.
They lost by a cumulative 4 points in both of those games.
Yeah, I mean, they did, and they should have won against the Cardinals with the field goal at the end, right? So this is another offense that can put up points. This is another offense that has a great running game, that has really good receivers and skill position players. So we're going to sit here after another week and say, okay, if we come in here and it was the Cardinals score of next week, it's 34 of 33, well, sorry, the offense, man, you're not doing what you need to do. The defense, they get a pass. It's okay. We're good giving up over 30 points per game.
It's
like
just,
that to me is the stuff that I don't understand, why there isn't more people pointing to that necessarily. Not saying that that is the sole reason why you lost the game, but people being upset about that. It's like, it's okay. The offense needed to score 40 in this game.
Yeah, I am fine with pointing fingers at the offense and saying, hey, Russ, you're getting paid $35 million and you want to be MVP and you want to win a Super Bowl. So put together a sustained drive in the second half, but also in overtime when it matters. Like, I keep those fingers pointed. That's a conversation to be had. And I would feel like Russell Wilson knows that and the offense knows that and Shane Waldron knows that.
Yeah, that's the offensive expectation.
Exactly,
absolutely.
But I think that it is weird to me that when you try to say this defense can be better, they have the talent to be better, that people question it. Like, it's not shifting full blame on the defense. It's saying this defense has stars on it. Like, what, you have a defensive minded head coach, you have first and second round picks, you have the highest paid safety, one of the highest paid linebackers, both of those guys are first team all pros. There's no reason this can't be a strength for you. I feel like I am in the Twilight Zone talking about a Pete Carroll defense that gave up 200-plus rushing yards on the ground, and no one is saying that that's a problem. What is happening, Curtis? What's happening here? I hate it. I don't like it here, so let's get out of it. Let's get out of here. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Mariners have clinched a winning record in the 2021 season after beating the A's for the seventh straight time. You also get Cole Irvin today. What is the real headline?
It's a phenomenal accomplishment for a team facing such low expectations to start the year. But here's the second and most important part. They aren't getting a wild card spot unless starting pitching holds up. That is the key for this team.
Well, they have to get it because Chris Flexen is the guy that you would count on in this situation. And the next game after that, Yusei Kikuchi, which is the biggest, no pun intended, the biggest wild card of all, right? I mean, you have no idea what Yusei Kikuchi is going to do on that fourth nine. What you can do is guarantee with a great a pitcher that's been solid for you all season long, and Chris Flexen goes and gets it done. And honestly, it'd be great to get that eighth win, to go and get that series win against none other than A's pitcher Cole Irvin, who had a lot of interesting comments to say earlier this season. And then the Mariners go and own this guy ever since. Continue to do that. Continue to rub it in this guy's face. I would love nothing more than that. And here's the thing about this 2021 team. They have a outside shot. I mean, it is an outside shot. Last night, perfect example. They have come up with this big win. They catch up to the A's, but guess what? The Blue Jays, the Yankees, and the Red Sox win ahead of you. So you don't really gain in the wild card. You stay at three. And when you're talking about this team, all you can do is control what you can control. But this 2021 team will forever be one of my all-time favorites. And we'll get into later in the show as to why that is.
Headline rewrites.
It's college football. The college football playoff expansion may not only be delayed, but the previously scheduled September 28th vote on expansion may not even happen at all. What is the real headline?
Fans aren't the only ones who have no idea what the college football landscape is going to look like in 5 years. That's what this tells me. The commissioners are also wondering, well, wait a minute. Now that the SEC has gone and taken Oklahoma and Texas, what's it going to look like? Are there going to be limits on how many teams you can have? Are we going to have this playoff expansion? And Sankey and the SEC is going to take all this money for it. Also, let me add this, not as obviously part of the headline, but as just a general takeaway. Everyone was talking about how the nil rights and athletes making some money would change college football and college sports, and it will. But you know what's clearly changing it even more so right now, particularly football in this case? It's the commissioners themselves. It is the, I don't want to say greed. It's not greed, because your job as a commissioner is to grow your conference. So that's not the right word I'm looking for, but it is the search for constant growth and kind of dominating other conferences that Sankey and the SEC is doing by acquiring those two schools, by brokering that deal on the side as you're working on the playoff expansion. That has nothing to do with athletes getting paid. It's all commissioners. It's all the people overseeing these schools, overseeing the college football playoffs. That's what's affecting things, not like an athlete getting paid $2,000 to talk about a car dealership.
I just think this is a huge missed opportunity if they decide not to vote on it at all and this doesn't become a thing, because college football playoff expansion would be a tremendous opportunity for college football, in my personal opinion. And I honestly think that the reason why a lot of these commissioners don't want to do it is because they already feel like in the Power Five conferences, they already have their good old boys club and they don't want anybody else to be a part of it. They don't want to have the extra circus. The other part of it being, all right, how does it affect the bowl games? How does it affect some of the tradition that has been there in college football? And what I would say is it can amplify it. It can amplify what these games are and what they mean and what stadiums they're being played in. So overall, I just think that the college football committee, college football commissioners, really missing the boat on this one.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, 76ers star Ben Simmons says he won't report to the team's training camp and is refusing to play for Philadelphia ever again. What is the real headline?
It's the best news for Philly fans since Walgreens announced a midwinter sale on batteries.
Think about it.
Yeah, just for a split second, though. That's all it takes.
I can't get over the fact that Philadelphia, 2 years in a row, had the number one overall pick, and they picked two guys that couldn't shoot, Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
That's the number one skill you need in basketball.
No,
and
Curtis.
And they picked two guys in a row that couldn't do it.
No, Curtis. You just need incredible talent and athleticism, and you can coach the shooting. You can coach it.
Can you shoot a basketball? That should be the first tick box on any survey you give
to
potential employee.
It's crazy, because with Ben Simmons, he is wildly talented. It just makes you wonder what his career is eventually going to be, because when you talk about that athleticism, it's off the charts. But clearly, he can't be your best player. He can't be your one or two guy. He's got to be a role player within a really good franchise. And I think that Ben Simmons has definitely worn out his welcome when it comes to Philly fans and 76ers fans. And you know, I don't think any one of these people are in terms of their fandom is going to be affected or shaken by the announcement of Ben
Philly
Simmons.
Philly fans not losing sleep over this one?
No, I don't think
Curtis, what do you think happens for him next? I mean, does it have to be a trade? Like, what's happening? I think after the playoffs, people were like, Ben Simmons isn't playing for the 76ers again. They were like, he is gone.
Nor do I think the 76ers want Ben Simmons to play for
him. Well, it's like, I'm breaking up with you. You can't break up with me.
Yeah, I think Simmons wants to go to a spot where there is an even more established superstar than Joel Embiid. Like, we're talking guys on the level of, like, Giannis or LeBron whatever. I've heard Golden State kind of get thrown out there as a potential landing spot for Ben Simmons, but I don't see that happening. But man, that guy's got every tool imaginable and yet has never really gotten any better than he was as a rookie. So
is that when it's mental stuff or like mechanics?
It's definitely mechanics. There's a conspiracy theory out there that I kind of subscribe to.
I'm here for it.
That
what is
Ben,
it?
Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand. He shoots left-handed, but he dribbles and does everything with his right hand. So they think that if he shoots with his right hand, he might be a little better.
You would think that would have gotten figured out.
He has to have tried that. There's no way he has not tried that before.
I don't know.
I think it's probably just a weird quirk of how he plays. There's no way he hasn't tried to shoot with his right hand.
I mean, but it's like everybody in the office doing everything right-handed, and then all of a sudden you just pick something up left-handed, and it's like, yeah, this feels right. No, like, you're right-handed. Why are you doing the number one skill that it takes to be good at basketball with the opposite hand?
I have a harder time subscribing to this theory, as fun as it is, versus the Ryan Fitzpatrick water park theory.
Well, yeah, that came with receipts.
Yeah, that was a fact.
Shout out to whoever that caller was.
That was incredible.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no way they haven't tried that yet before, but I digress. We are going to have Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times on with us to talk about the key for this Mariners club, not just for the rest of the series, but as the season continues. Before that, though, we're going to continue quickly this conversation about the Seahawks. They struggled with the run, both establishing it on offense and stopping it on defense. And it was core to the loss on Sunday. So here's the question. How can they make sure it doesn't happen again? Because they're about to play Dalvin Cook and the Vikings this upcoming week. Let's ask Robert Turbin. He's a former running back, obviously. Current Seahawks pre- and post-game analyst. He joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, let's keep this conversation going because I got to figure out what the Seahawks need to do moving forward. We're turning the tables here, turning the tide. Maybe that's the better phrase. It was almost a Jake-ism. Seahawks pre- and post-game analyst Robert Turbin joining us now. Hey, Robert, do I call you Robert Turbo? What do you prefer?
You know, either one's good. Rob, Robert, Turbo.
I'll go with Rob.
It's all the same person.
Okay, we'll go with Rob. We're going with the Seahawks analyst, Rob, right now. That's what I'm rolling with.
I like it.
Perfect. So I'll start with this. Lean into your insight here. Obviously, you have plenty to say about the performance as a whole, but I got to say, watching them struggle to both establish the run in this one and defend it makes me a little bit nervous about Dalvin Cook and the Vikings. How are you looking ahead at how they can fix that problem into week three?
Well, I think it's going to come down to, ball possession. If you look at it, you're talking about the Titans' run game. I mean, anytime you give an NFL running back 35 carries, at some point in the game, he's going to find his rhythm, and he's going to be able to take advantage of those creases within the defense. You know, in the first half, they kept their innings pretty bottled up. But the problem is they were just on the field too long. And our offense wasn't able to sustain drives on the other side. And so, listen, my key to that game was, you know, against the Titans was third down, keeping Derrick Henry off of the field. It's going to be the same thing when they go to Minnesota against Dalvin Cook.
So one of the things, Turbo, that I was looking at in terms of sustaining those drives was the fact that they had so little success in their first down runs. I mean, you look just overall in the open field with Chris Carson, the stat line is not very favorable. I mean, you have 11 carries. You have 2.6 yards per carry for Chris Carson. What did you see that made it difficult for their running game to get going?
Well, the thing that made it difficult for their running game to get going, honestly, is the fact that they didn't give them the ball enough. I mean, let's just be honest. Listen, on first down, talking about first down runs in particular, it's always going to be hard to run the ball on first down in the NFL. But if you continue to run the ball as you get into the second and third and eventually those fourth quarters, those creases will start to open up and you'll be able to start to catch your rhythm and break for those bigger runs as you saw with the Tennessee Titans. What did the Tennessee Titans do in the second half after being down? Wherever the score was at halftime, they were down big, obviously, right? Seahawks come back. Second half, they go three and out. The Titans ran the football. It wasn't like they started throwing the ball all over the place to try to get themselves back in the game. They went right back to running the ball. And with the big lead that we had, you would expect us to do the same thing, but we didn't. In the first game against the Colts, very balanced offense, 23 passes, 22 total runs with Chris Carson getting 16 of those things. 31 passes in this game. Under 20 runs, and I think Chris Carson only had like 13 carries. So it's about just sticking with it if it's a part of your game plan, regardless of the success that you're having early in the game.
Is there a way to establish that in different kinds of ways? Is it just kind of like, hey, keep pounding the rock? Do you get Carson involved in the pass game? I mean, how can they this week really keep that run going and establish it a little more consistently on offense?
Yeah, I mean, there's some things you can do with Chris Carson. That, you know, you have those play-action screen passes where you're just trying to get your back in space with some blockers in front of them and you know, be able to get some, you know, catch some yards that way. You know, obviously we've seen the fly sweeps and things of that nature, even though we didn't see it a ton against the Titans, and maybe that had a lot to do with, you know, D. Eskridge being out. But certainly there are some things in those senses that you can do. But at the end of the day, it's about sticking and staying committed to the run.
You know, Turbo, one of the things that I think people gloss over, because immediately it goes to the blame game. It goes to, you know, who did this, who did that. You know, you'd mentioned earlier the sustained drives, the needing for that to be the case, the third down conversions. How does that help out your defense, and is that the main reason that you would point to them giving up 17 points and however many yards they did in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I mean, your defense needs a blow too. You know, they need a break. I mean, you know, that's what this game came down to. Even in overtime, defense goes out there, they get a stop. I mean, that's a huge stop, you know, after being on the field majority of the time. And they still make the big play, get the ball back to the offense, and you know we're obviously not able to do anything with it. And so, you know, time of possession is huge, especially when you're playing against a prolific offense, an efficient offense, which the Vikings are. Statistically, you know, they're a great offense. You know, they're 0-2, but you know they put points up on the board. They get a lot of yards. And so, you know, one of the keys for us to win this game, and listen, there's as far as the blame game is concerned, to answer your question, when you're dealing with a team game, no, it's not about pointing the finger. As soon as you start pointing the finger, you know, you're not a championship team anymore. Everybody's in this together. But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, the defense was on the field, you know, too long in that last game. And that's going to have to change in order for them to beat the Vikings in Minnesota this upcoming Sunday.
So what's the key for the offense to stay on the field? Did you feel like it fell apart with just physically not executing? Was it seeing stuff in the second half that you think they didn't see in the first? Is it just like bad play calls? What was maybe some of the one or two big issues with you or to you?
Well, for me, I think you need to stick with the run, even if it's not working early in the game, because the run game is one of those things. You know, it's like a rhythm type of a position, and it takes time a lot of times for those, you know, for those big runs and the run game overall to get going. You can, in the passing game, sometimes you just run by somebody and have a bunch of big plays. That's what we saw in the first half. So I think that's certainly one of the keys. In the first game, I feel like we saw a lot of movement, a lot of motion. Guys lining up in different spots offensively where you're not really able to track where guys are. We saw Everett line up out wide sometimes, and in this second game, you just didn't see as much of that. You didn't see as much movement, motion, guys lining up in different spots. It just kind of seemed like, man, you know, tight end was lining up in the tight end spot. You know, DK was on the left, Tyler was on the right. And so that, I think, getting back to mixing up, you know, mixing some of that stuff up will help the offense. And then I think getting back to some of that up-tempo offense that we talked about, not only in the offseason, but we did see a little bit of that in the first game, can certainly help your offense catch rhythm and get going early in the game.
Turbo, so
those are keys, in my opinion.
And I think those are great keys for this offense to get going here in the second half, and definitely to, you know, play good complementary football through an entire game. When you look at the defense and the way that it's moving forward, is there anything that you see that concerns you, or are you saying, hey, look, they there's all these other circumstances, and you know they gave up what they gave up, but you know here's how the story was written. Is there anything that really stands out to you, though?
No. There really isn't. We can sit here, you know, we can point the finger at the defense if we want. The fact of the matter is they were on the field, including overtime, 47 minutes of that game. And that's just too long for your defense in comparison to 22, you know, for our offense. Overall, I thought they played great. I thought they played great in the first game against the Colts, against a pretty prolific run team. And, you know, I thought they played pretty well in that first half against the Titans. And so, you know, on offense, we've got to help them out a little bit more.
All right. He is Seahawks pre- and post-game analyst Robert Turbin. You guys can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Make sure you tune in on Sundays. That includes this Sunday for Week 3 against the Vikings. Thanks so much, Rob.
I want to say thanks for having me on the show, Jake. Thanks for having you. You've been avoiding me this whole time, man. Like,
what are you talking about? What are you talking about,
like
Turbo?
You've been avoiding me like I'm COVID.
No way, bro.
So thank you for finally having me on the show with you and Dave.
Rob, hey, I got your back. I would not let him keep doing this.
I feel betrayed right now. Absolutely betrayed. You know what we're going to do? Because you've said this, we're going to get you on every single week. How about that? You don't even have a choice.
That. All right.
I would love this. Listeners are so excited to hear from you.
All right. I appreciate that very much. You guys take care.
All right, Turbo. Have a great day, man.
Bye. Don't forget, you guys can hear Robert Turbin as a pre- and post-game analyst during the Seahawks broadcast. So before and after the show, stay tuned for his takeaways. I actually was really encouraged by what he said about the defense having expectations that they would perform better in different situations, because obviously they're going to need a balanced attack on both sides of the ball to make it out of this NFC West, which, by the way, is undefeated outside of Seattle. Man, it's a tough start just all around in this division. All right, so we are taking a break from the Seahawks, looking at the Mariners. We're going to talk about the key to save their playoff hopes. It's the same thing that got them to these past two wins. That's coming up next. Plus, Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times is going to join us. Don't go anywhere.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Driven by CarPros Kia of Tacoma.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake and Stacy is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. Great news, you guys, for the final homestand of the Mariners season. 710 ESPN Seattle is bringing you a chance to score $7.10 Mariners tickets for the game on Monday, September 27th, when the M's host the Oakland A's. Just use promo code 710 to redeem this special offer in the center field bleachers. I've sat there before. It's actually a pretty cool view of the entire field. More info at 710sports.com/events. Speaking of the Mariners, they got a win, their second of the series, now leading 2-0 in that four-game series, beating the A's 5-2. It starts with solid pitching once again. Marco Gonzalez, 6 innings, 4 hits, just 2 runs allowed, walks 1, strikes out 3. Those 2 runs were both home runs. Another great, solid quality outing from him. Steckenrider gets the save in this one. Crawford 3-for-5 with a run, 2 RBI. He's obviously phenomenal. But you know what else was pretty great to see? It was additional contributions from Jared Kelnick, like with this triple.
Here's the pitch on the way, swinging a drive into the gap in right center field. That's going to get down for extra bases on the track and off the wall. Kelnick steaming for second. Up with the ball is Marte. Makes the turn at second, heading for 3. The relay by Andrews. Throw to third, and out at third is Kelnick. Down with a tag, Matt Chapman. Holy smokes, a close play at third base. Kelnick trying to get into third with a triple. Scott Service may want to take a look at this one. And he is safe at third base. Jared Kelnick is in there with a leadoff triple.
Great call on that one. Kelnick, this excludes last night's game, hitting .266 in September compared to .196 in August. He was lower than that in July, though was called up middle of July, so I'm not really including it. But you've seen a pretty regular improvement from him this season, which under the radar, considering the importance he means to this franchise, one of the best things you can have this late in the year.
Oh, absolutely it is. I mean, that to me has been one of the fun, exciting things. And guys, you remember what our goal was for Jared Kelnick after that huge slump? Do you remember what we said?
Yeah.
If he could finish at the end of the year.
If he could finish above 200. Well, he's 266 in September.
If he could finish above 200, I mean, my goodness. So
right now,
he's at 177. So
he's going to need to go nuts.
Anything is possible. Anything is possible.
I mean, he has been, though. He's had a really good start to September and he's been playing well. And so the thing that's exciting about this is you get to see the talent. You get to see, you know, the power. You get to see the speed that he has on the bases. And you can see how the reason why people in baseball, you know, analytics groups, experts all across the board have been so excited about Jared Kelnick and fully believe that he will be one of the future great players in this league. And obviously that was hard to see as you're watching him go through the slump. You're seeing bits and flashes of it, but very little consistency. So it's great to have this consistent run. And for, you know, anybody that wants to, you know, go down the pessimistic road and go, well, why couldn't he have figured it out earlier? Well, I wish he could have too, but he didn't. And he is now. And that to me is all I care about. You can end the season on a positive note for Jared Kelnick. You can have those good vibes rolling into the offseason and into 2022, the sky's the limit in terms of what he can do. So that to me has been awesome to see, and it's really cool to witness history. Jared Kelnick, his first triple.
Someone who has been a model of consistency, at least defensively, it's J.P. Crawford making this great play on a ground out.
Here's the stretch, and again the 2-2 to Canna, swinging a line shot on a hop, snared it short by Crawford. Down on his knees, gets up, fires the first, in time to Rob Canna. Holy smokes, and the inning is over. Smooth. What a play at short. J.P. Crawford on a shot off the bat of Mark Canna. And the inning is over. What a play by JP.
I'm going to be asking Ryan Divish this when he joins us next, but how do you not give him a gold glove for this year?
You do. The question is you do give him the gold glove. There isn't even a question at this point. And quite frankly, I think you have three gold glovers in your infield. You've got Crawford, you got Ty France, and you got Seager.
Ty France is a gold glover this year?
Heck yes. Yes, absolutely he is a gold glover. I think it would be an absolute travesty if he didn't win one.
I think, though, ultimately, while we're talking about all these great plays, it's fantastic to see this from Jared Kelnick, that improvement. It's obviously always great to see JP make those plays in the infield. They're always really fun. And he had a solo home run in the top of the ninth that was fantastic, gives them that 5-2 lead. But ultimately, what we've learned in these two games is that this series and the rest of the season, any hope, any slim hope the Mariners have at getting to the postseason will be on the back of starting pitching. You've had a great outing the day before yesterday from Tyler Anderson with just one run allowed through seven. You had just two runs allowed through six from Marco, two quality outings from those guys. You've got Flexen on the mound today. You've got Kikuchi tomorrow. It feels like, obviously, every game feels a must win for this team right now, but starting pitching has been that consistent theme that will get you there, and you cannot have it slip.
Well, it's the catalyst, right? It's the catalyst for them to even have a chance in every game that they play. So that is even more so important when it comes to this series. It comes to the fact that you've got Yusei Kikuchi to finish out this fourth game. You need to be able to win the series with Chris Flexen, and you have to be able to get it done, because then it becomes very much in jeopardy, handing the ball off in a situation where you're tied and you're going for the series in that fourth game. So got to get it done to make you feel a lot better. But the truth is as we talked about, for the Mariners to have a shot, for them to even have a shot at this wild card at this point, they have to go on a run. They have to go on a winning streak and have a pretty significant one for them to be able to pull it off. And so we'll see if it can happen. But in the meantime, you know, watching Kelnick, watching J.P. Crawford not only do his thing with his glove, but with his bat as well. Stacey, can we play? Can we play cut number eight? Can we play, you know, Crawford's solo home run at the top of the ninth? That was an absolute bomb.
And the pitch swung on and a fly ball into right field down the line. Well hit, and this one is a home run. Goodbye, baseball. Just fair down the line, right over the top of the foul pole. J.P. Crawford with his ninth home run of the season. The Mariners get an insurance run here in the ninth inning. And it's now the Mariners 5 and the A's 2.
I mean, huge. I mean, when I was watching, I couldn't tell if it went foul or if it was fair. But you end up hitting the home run with J.P. Crawford, and that was really important insurance runs right there from J.P. But just think about where this guy was heading into this year. It feels so long ago, but this guy was one of the players that you looked at and people had serious question marks about J.P. Crawford's future heading into the season. He stepped up in a big way. Remember everybody talking about his spring training? How he had
an really
awful
quiet bat.
Awful. No, not just a quiet bat. He had an awful spring training at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thought that it was destined that J.P. Crawford was not going to finish this season well, or if his future was going to remain here in Seattle. Not only has his bat come alive, but he has established himself as a key component of this Mariners team, and I love it. He's a great guy, a great attitude that I want in this clubhouse.
We'll continue to talk about some of these key components, what they could look to improve on or continue to do well at in these final 11 games of the season. What do they need to try to get to that wild card? We'll talk about all of this with Seattle Times' Ryan Divish. He joins us next. Don't go anywhere.